You're listening to the Morphology Podcast. Thanks for tuning in to the Morphology Podcast. AKA Murph here to share interviews about biking experiences from cyclists who have pedaled to places all over. Each week, we'll get to know new people and explore new destinations to ride your bike. As you listen to these adventures, you may wonder, why haven't I done that yet? Well, today we're going to talk to Beth McBride, who won DFL at Mid-South. Now, what the heck is DFL? Well, I'll keep it PG, but DFL stands for Dead Freaking Last. And at Mid-South, there's a celebration for the last rider to finish the 100-mile gravel course. A high-energy celebration that I've never experienced before. Hundreds of people line up at the finish line, and this year, as Beth McBride crossed that finish line as DFL, people were cheering, the champagne was spraying, and the band was playing. It was epic. Bobby Wintle is the race director of Mid-South, and he goes out of his way to make this weekend one heck of a party. Beth tells us about her experience at Mid-South, which was her first 100-mile gravel finish. She also tells us about a challenge she joined back in January 1st to ride 10 miles a day. With over 100 days of consecutive riding, she's still going strong on this challenge and has no plans to end her streak. I was lucky to get to meet and ride bikes with Beth recently when we both were part of the Driftless Gravel Camp in Winona, Minnesota. We both share a deep love for the bicycle and just having the opportunity to ride. It was such a fun weekend. Anyway, here is my interview with Beth. A very warm welcome to Beth McBride. How are you, Beth?
I'm doing great tonight. Good. How are you?
Good. I have been looking forward to this recording because I didn't get to actually meet you, but I saw the action that took place around you. Gosh, has it been a month now? Maybe three weeks?
I feel like it's been almost a month. I think it's been a month.
Wow.
I think you're right.
Yeah. And that was down in Oklahoma at an event called Mid-South. So thank you for coming on the podcast to kind of share your story about that event and also just about you and biking.
Yeah. Thank you for inviting me. I'm excited to kind of talk about my ventures here and share that.
Well, why don't we kick it off with if you could tell listeners where you live and maybe just like what biking is like there.
Yeah, so I live in a small town called Lake Mills, Wisconsin. Hmm. We have about 6,000 residents who live here. We're just down the road, actually, from Trek. The Trek headquarters in Waterloo, about 8 miles away from Trek.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so fairly close. We do have a lot of folks who work for Trek and live in Lake Mills. And I'm also close to Madison, about 45 minutes west of Madison, Wisconsin.
Does everyone in Lake Mills get a free Trek bike since you live so close?
Oh, wouldn't that be nice? I have to tell you, though, living here as long as I have, I've been here about 15 years now, so I wasn't really involved in cycling 15 years ago, but, you know, I saw a lot of Trek bikes.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you're in a community where it's Trek, that's the only kind of bike brand you know. So I can tell you, being involved in, you know, like all the gravel and the biking and seeing all these different brands, I'm like, oh, there's more than Trek.
There's more than just Trek. And, you know, you said you're in a small town of 6,000. Are you primarily on road when you bike, or are you gravel or a little bit everything?
So it's a bit of both. For me, I don't like being on the road anymore. I definitely prefer gravel. We don't have a lot of gravel options. We live fairly close, just about a mile away from the Glacial Drummond State Trail, which is, you know, limestone, dirt, pack. Mm-hmm. So that's my gravel route of choice. I do that a lot in the summer when I'm outside. So you'll definitely see a mixture of folks here, you know, some gravelly, you know, a lot of road cyclists. So it's a mixture. Mm-hmm. We just don't really have, you know, dirt roads around here, unfortunately.
Sure, sure. And you said, you know, like 15 years ago when you first moved, you weren't into cycling. So what happened in your adult life that got you, like, gave you the bug?
Yeah, so so I was a competitive power lifter for a while, and strongman competitor. And my husband was the one who actually was a cyclist, road cyclist. He did ultra endurance events, you know, hundreds of miles, 400 miles. And after we had our daughter, you know, I had fallen kind of out of doing powerlifting. He's like, well, let's start cycling together. So he's the one who kind of brought me into the fold mm-hmm. of, you know, road cycling. I can't say that I really ever enjoyed it, though. Mm-hmm. You know, just something to do to spend time with him out on the road. But I never felt this deep sense of love for it or connection. And it wasn't until, I think it's been 2 years now, almost 2 years, where another one of my friends was like, oh, you're doing all this road cycling. You should try a gravel event and, you know, sign up for Gravel Worlds in Lincoln, Nebraska. Mm. So I was like, all right, let's do that. Right. And I had never been on any kind of gravel before.
What?
Yeah. I took my road bike and they're like, put some 38s on it, some Gravel Kings. I'm like, all right, I'll do that. So my first true gravel experience was at Gravel Worlds in Lincoln, Nebraska. 77 miles. And I have to admit, now that's not my hardest race, but that was probably the hardest thing I had done ever, right? I had no experience in gravel.
Wow.
I had no experience like descending, ascending, dealing with like this chunk, you know, chunks of gravel and sand. So that was an experience for sure.
Wow. Well, and obviously a positive experience because you went on, maybe you have other events under your belt now, but you went on to do Mid-South gravel.
I did. Yeah. I've done a bunch of events, but Mid-South for me was kind of like the pinnacle because I've been trying to get, you know, 100-mile gravel century. And part of the problem is I'm slow, right? I'm back of the pack. Mm-hmm. And so many events have cutoff times, you know, they have to, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, they might not have enough resources, you know, to be out there all day, or they may have to deal with, you know, the city or the town saying, no, you have to be done, right, by a certain time.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew going into it that I was going to do everything I could to get across that finish line so I could make it my first, you know, gravel century. So
like when I think of a gravel event, because like I did Gravel Worlds and I also did one in near Kansas City. I think the town was Smithville. It was called Humphreys Gravel. And when you look at, you know, I think they call themselves a race. So you have the competitors in the front who, you know, probably have like 10,000 followers on social media and they go really fast and they, I don't even understand how they can bike so close to their fellow competitors. Then you have kind of the middle of the pack where maybe those people are trying to go as fast as they can, but they're not going to be on the podium. And then you have like what you mentioned, which I think, because that's usually where I am, is more of a back of the pack. Like I'm still trying to do my best. I'm not back there drinking beer and doing fireball shots, but I'm definitely, you know, taking my time, finding the comfortable place on the gravel roads. And so is that kind of a good indication? Like, is that also where you fit in, or where do you fit in the grand scheme of gravel riders?
Yeah. I mean, when I'm out there, doing gravel rides, I know I'm not competitive, right? Mm-hmm. So I don't even pretend to think I am. I'm slow and I'm okay with it. I do train, right? And I do actively try to do like the best I possibly can and try to get better, but I'm totally at this point fine kind of being at the back of the pack. And I'm not out there, you know, like you said, I'm not out there just drinking beers and hanging out.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm trying to do my best that I can, and just to enjoy the experience as well. That's a big part of it for me too, right? Just enjoy what I'm doing.
Yeah.
For sure.
Let's get into Mid-South specifically. At the beginning of this podcast, I kind of described what Mid-South is, you know, a gravel event down in Oklahoma. It's got its own culture for sure. Mm-hmm. I mean, the race, the ride director is quite a character. I'm sure that you got your Bobby hug at the end of your event.
I got lots of Bobby hugs and hugs from like people I don't know who they were. So many people at the end.
So tell us about your Mid-South just how the day went, and then the important part is the finish line.
Yeah, so I felt really good, quite honestly, the entire day. I don't know, 100 miles, it didn't feel like 100 miles right in the moment, mm-hmm. because I was just enjoying, like, the beauty. It's so beautiful. It's different, like, scenery, and, you know, the land is different than what I'm used to from Wisconsin, right? You know, the red dirts, and, you know, just, I was really, like, engrossed in riding, mm-hmm. and just experiencing it. And I mean, I know a lot of people, right, in the gravel community. So many friends were out there, you know, so that's a big part of it for me. That really helped just keep me in good spirits. I felt fantastic. Mm-hmm. Most of the day, I had no aches, no pains. I just was enjoying the ride for sure. So I think it was a really good ride.
You were properly trained for this event. Sounds
like. I think
so. Yeah.
Although I was a little slower probably than in my mind. You know, like I said, I know I'm back of the pack, but I didn't quite realize like how long I had been out there.
Ah, yeah. Yeah,
when I came across the finish line, like, oh, it's 12:30 in the morning. Oh my goodness.
And what time did you start?
I think I started at 8. I was out there for a total of 16 and a half hours. So I feel like it was probably 8 o'clock. Does that seem right when I do the math?
Yep. And like 16 hours of doing anything, right? I mean, we're talking mm-hmm. about biking, but you have to speak to your mental, like the either your mental game or your mental strengths or your low points, because there's no way the whole day you're just like, this is, here I go, one more mile and another mile and 16 hours later. A quick interruption to tell you this week's episode is sponsored by the Buffalo Lodge Bicycle Resort. Located in Colorado Springs, Colorado, this is the outdoor enthusiast's ideal place to stay for fun and relaxation. The lodge is nestled at the base of Pikes Peak and just a half mile from Garden of the Gods Park. Learn more at bicycleresort.com. Now back to the show.
Yeah, so I felt mentally pretty strong most of the ride, mm-hmm. up until the point where it went dark, because I, you know, I'm a city girl. I grew up in the city, and, you know, I just, you know, growing up, we never did, you know, outdoorsy activities, right? It's dark, you're in your house. So that's something I've really had to kind of overcome.
Mm. Well, and plus you're in a place that you aren't used to.
Right. So that was for me, probably was the lowest, you know, when it got dark. You know, I'm out in the middle of the country, right? And, you know, it's hearing the sounds around you. Mm-hmm. It's pitch black, except for your little, you know, headlights. And the other piece of it too was not really being able to see, right, what's in front of you.
Yeah.
There was a lot of ruts and interesting, you know, things you had to avoid out in those roads. So that was the part that was hard for me. It's just dealing with the darkness and, you know, what that felt like.
Sure. And I can't recall a month ago, it turned dark like maybe at 7 o'clock-ish?
Yeah, I think it was maybe like 8 o'clock-ish.
Okay.
I remember calling my husband, and I think it was around 8 o'clock, just to let him know, you know, I'm fine. I'm feeling great. I'm like, I'm going to be done in a couple hours. I don't know what I was thinking. and I remember it was like sunset and, you know, the kind of like the later part of sunset.
Yeah.
8 o'clock.
So, okay. So you have, you know, you're on a gravel event. So you have uneven terrain. You are using a headlight to kind of see your way through. And then I'm assuming you have some sort of a computer that has a map to kind of keep you on the right track. But were you like, I think I would be afraid of A, my light's going dead, and then B, like creatures in the night.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly how I felt. So the other piece too is the last like 20 miles, maybe there was another woman. We kept kind of leapfrogging. Hmm. And once it got dark out, we kind of combined forces, right? Mm-hmm. Prior to that, I was worried about losing my headlamp altogether, my headlight. So I turned it to the lowest possible setting.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And then, you know, on my head unit, I was like, I am worried I'm going to, you know, lose battery there as well. So I didn't have the backlight on, so I couldn't see anything. Mm-hmm. I only knew, you know, being prompted by the head unit, like turn left or turn right. So it was pretty dark,
yeah.
For sure. But when I started riding with that other woman, Elma, you know, we had both headlights in at that point, right, to kind of help. It was still pretty slow going. In my mind, too, I'm like, I wonder if I could stop at one of these, like, you know, homes or ranches and, like, buy a flashlight from them and, tape it to my bike. You know, that's kind of what I was thinking. Like, how do I get out of this if I truly can't see? And then, of course, the creatures, too. There were a lot of surprise dogs. And even at night, they were out there.
Oh, right. Yeah.
So.
Well, and we haven't actually said this yet, but you ended up coming across the finish line as the very last athlete. And Mid-South makes a huge deal about that. So do you want to explain, like, what that was like crossing the finish line? I'm assuming there was a point when you knew you were going to be the last athlete. Is that true?
Yeah. So there was two of us, Elma and I, you know, riding in. We knew, I'd say, right before the single track section of the course, which was around mile 90, that we were last. There were two other people behind us, and they, like, zoomed past us at one point. And then the Jeeps were behind us, you know, so we knew, like, if the Jeep's behind you, you're probably, like, one of the last folks out there, right?
And they're, so, like, they're once, like, the support vehicle, right?
They are.
Okay,
right.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, the Red Dirt Jeep Club, pretty awesome people. I heard that they really look forward, you know, to Mid-South and being there for riders. But we knew, you know, that we were kind of back of the pack. And I have to say, like, once we got into Stillwater, into the city, we rode past, like, all the Jeeps had, like, lined up, like, in a parking lot. And as we rode past, you know, they were flashing their lights and, you know, honking their horn.
Oh, wow.
And the Jeeps behind us were, like, throwing firecrackers out the window. And then we got a police escort, you know, as we came into Stillwater, and you make this left turn, you go up this little hill. And as we, you know, crested that little tiny hill, it was like a sea of people at the finish line and, like, folks running on the side of the road next to us and, you know, music, you know, just people, like, cheering. And as we rolled in, it was like a sea of champagne and everybody screaming. And it was really emotional. You know, I actually started getting emotional when we came into Stillwater, because I was like, I'm finally getting my 100-mile, you know, gravel century. So for me, it was just really special knowing, all right, I just did this. Like, it's happening. Yeah, so it was just, it was a wild celebration at the end. That's the best way to describe it.
Yeah.
And lots of different people, right? There was community members, there was other, you know, friends, other cyclists, there were pro cyclists there. Just, it was a wide mix of all kinds of people who were at that finish line.
Yeah, it was amazing. And I think anybody who does racing or bike events, especially the events that celebrate the last athlete that comes in, it's called DFL. And I'll just say dead freaking last instead of what probably what you would want to say.
Yeah.
But tell everyone about the award that you won.
Yeah, so for being DFL, you get essentially, it's a great big longhorn skull. So think skull with the ginormous horns on the end. That was the trophy. I did get a plaque as well, but, you know, everybody's fixated on that skull with the horns. It was ginormous.
And I was on a conference call with you a couple weeks ago, and you told everybody something special about that. The smell. So what was that like?
Yeah, the smell. I didn't realize how smelly it was, right, until I got up in the morning and put that thing in my car and drove 15 hours home. Super smelly. I ended up trying to put it in a garbage bag, and I found, like, dryer sheets and stuffed those in. But yes, it was very smelly.
Oh, wow. But I mean, come on. You probably wouldn't trade that moment for anything.
No, it was pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Super amazing.
Like, just seeing some of the photographs, like, we've had Marley Blonsky on this podcast, and she does so much for the cycling community and her cause, which is All Bodies on Bikes. And I don't know if she was the first one to give you a hug. You had so many people around you, but that moment was a really cool photograph.
Yeah, and I'm glad, you know, I'm glad that she was there. And my connection too to All Bodies and Bikes, going back to that first time I rode gravel, you know, at Gravel World, I met Marley there and kind of started following, you know, all the work that she has done and the activism, you know, to get All Bodies and Bikes. Mm-hmm. And then after following her, then I got picked to be on the All Bodies and Bikes SPT gravel program.
Oh.
So last August, me and I think there was maybe 12 of us riders, we rode SPT gravel as part of the All Bodies and Bikes team. So I've known Marley now kind of through like the beginning of my journey all the way through. So that's why absolutely, you know, super special that she was, you know, there. And yeah, I'm pretty sure she might have hugged me first out of everybody. So
I'm sure that well, the whole day was probably a whirlwind, you know, just having to be on the bike for 16, or not, I should rephrase that, forgetting to be on the bike for 16 hours.
Uh-huh.
But then to have that whirlwind of a party, and that party was going hours before you got there. So I'm sure everyone was really, really stoked to see you come in.
Yeah, I heard that there was a pretty big party before I got there. And I was like, well, next year, I am not going to be DFL, and I want to be there to experience that party too, like everybody else got to.
Yeah. So do you have to give your skull back, or do you get to keep that forever?
I get to keep it.
Oh, wow. That is so cool.
Yeah. We are working on processing it a little bit more so we can actually hang it up in our house. It's a bit of a tedious process, but we definitely want to be able to hang it up.
Yeah.
On top of the fireplace.
Or if anything, if you guys have like a 1970s Cadillac, you could put it on the front end, drive around town.
Yeah. My friends, my teammates were like, strap it to the top of your car as you're driving home.
Oh my gosh. Well, that's a good segue. Like I mentioned earlier, I wanted to talk about gravel community and like, you know, talking about the DFL party, that says a lot about the gravel community in itself. But what does gravel community mean to you?
Yeah, through this community of gravel, I've just found, you know, first of all, people I probably would never have met, right, had it not been for, you know, these races and these events, number one. So I feel like now I have friends, right, across the country, number one, and friends that share like some really, you know, incredible love for being on the bike, right? Mm-hmm. And you know, just really shared kind of, you know, connections. That's a big part of me. And most of the folks that I know are really open and accepting, right? You like to ride your bike, great, we love that too. It doesn't come with these preconceived notions of, oh, you're a fat cyclist, we won't accept you. You mm-hmm. know, it goes far beyond that. So for me, it's just, you know, same community. It's just the friends you have and these shared experiences. I mean, how awesome we get to ride our bikes together, right? In, you know, Oklahoma. So
yeah.
I've never felt judged. How's that, right? And when I was riding road, right, and doing some of those road events, it just, the uneasiness I felt and just kind of the judgment I felt, mm-hmm. that was part of the reason why I just never loved road cycling. I just have not felt that at all in the gravel community.
Yeah. And especially when you look at the variety of athletes, you know, like I mentioned a while back, I mean, you've got, you know, hardcore, you know, athletes who probably train, you know, more hours than we work because they want to be on the podium. Like, I don't have that in me. Like, that's just not something I'm interested in. But yet I'm still out there on the same course. So, and you are too. So that's... that says a lot about how it feels to be out there.
Yeah, and I absolutely just love having the ability to ride my bike, right? I don't take that for granted. And I know certainly there's days when I'm training, I'm like, I kind of hate this, but then I have to just reframe it. I'm like, I get to do this.
Yeah.
And that makes me happy. So.
Okay, this is a good segue to my next topic. And actually, it doesn't matter if you're still doing it or if you have completed it, but because either way, it's amazing. But you are deep into, I'm going to just call it a 10-mile-a-day challenge. I don't know if there's an actual title for it, but do you want to tell us about it?
Yeah, absolutely. So way back in December, a person I follow on Instagram, Kevin Frias, he was like, hey, I'm going to do this challenge where, you pay in X amount of money. The challenge is, whoever lasts the longest of riding at least 10 miles a day for the most consecutive days wins the challenge. And half of the pot would go to the charity that he chose. And then if you won, your half you could donate to the charity that you chose. I'm like, all right, let's do it. I really needed kind of a little bit of a motivation to get on the bike. I had COVID, like November timeframe, and it just kind of, I lost interest in biking, because I had been so sick and I just was overwhelmed. So I'm like, all right, let's do this challenge. And I think 30 people initially joined the challenge.
And it
And then
started
slowly,
in January?
January 1st, January 1st, yep, start of the year. People slowly started to kind of drop out, sickness or, travel. And then it got down to two of us. And so we are still going strong. We are still biking at least 10 miles a day. Last week, Wednesday, no, Tuesday, was the 100th day of biking continuously. So I rode 100K. I rode 63 miles to celebrate that, the 100th day of cycling consecutively. So so we're still going strong. Our joke is this person and I that we're going to ride this challenge all the way to Mid-South 2025.
Oh my
And then the
gosh.
day, yeah, the day after Mid-South, then we'll ride 9 miles together and call it quits at that point. So we'll see what happens, right?
Wow. Well,
But yeah.
congratulations. Like,
Yay.
that's an amazing. I mean, 10 miles in itself is not everybody can ride their bikes 10 miles, but the time commitment, that's incredible.
And definitely, we've been out of town. Our daughter plays hockey, so we've had out of town tournaments. Just life in general, but I've always found a way to get those miles in. So yeah, it's just, I think it's been great for me for the consistency. And it's just part of my life now, right? It's like, oh, well, I have to make sure I get my miles in, and just thinking through the day of when I can do it, and whatnot. So yeah.
I found it incredibly inspiring that you were the DFL at Mid-South. You were on your bike for 16 hours. You probably got to bed, who knows, 2 o'clock in the morning. And you got up the next morning. Well, it was actually the same morning. You got up a few hours later and did your 10 miles, right?
I did, absolutely. That's, I slept 3 hours. But I knew, I'm like, I have to get my miles in because I knew I was leaving Stillwater that day. And I'm like, by the time I get somewhere, there's no way, right? Depending upon where he's, spend the night, there's no way I'm going to be able to ride. And I actually felt fine, honestly. I tried to just take an easy ride. But yeah, I was like, I have to get my 10 miles in. I just rode around like downtown Stillwater and all around to get my miles in. So.
Incredible. I love it. I love that. I like that goal. And I feel a tiny sense of competitive spirit in you, in that if your other guy who's doing 10 miles a day like calls you and says, I don't think I can do it tomorrow, you'll be like, well, I win.
No, I think I would be like, no, you have to get on your bike. You made a commitment to ending this challenge in 2025.
Oh, wow. Incredible. And you are in Wisconsin, right?
I'm in Wisconsin, yep.
So do you do any biking outside in the wintertime, or are you like on the trainer?
No, so I do have a fat tire.
Oh,
I do
sure.
bike. Yeah, I bike outside in the winter. I have to admit, I'm, native born Wisconsin. I absolutely hate the winter, but I've been trying, in my advanced age of learning to love or just learning to embrace winter and be outside. So I started snowshoeing last year. The fat tire I got 2 years ago. And so I definitely am trying to just, deal with the fact that I live in Wisconsin and it's cold and there's snow. In February, I did the Fat Tire Berkey in Cable,
Oh, wow.
Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was pretty fun. And we were also supposed to go to an event called Bike Across the Bay and Book Across the Bay in northern Wisconsin, where you actually like bike across frozen Lake Superior, and the other event you snowshoe or run across. But the winter was way too warm, and the lake didn't freeze, so that was out. which I was a little disappointed because it's pretty neat when you see, like, you know, in Strava that you've, you know, biked across a lake in the winter.
Right.
So yeah, I definitely have been trying to embrace winter and being outside.
Well, and I've found, because I have a fat tire bike as well, you know, I'm in Iowa, but half the battle is just walking out the door, you know, getting your 17 layers on, and just once you're out the door, even if you tell yourself, I'll just bike for 10 minutes and then I can go back on the trainer. I mean, once you're out there, aren't you like, all right, I made it this far.
Yeah, I agree with that. Especially winter, it is hard for me to be like, let's go do this, you know, especially when it's cold and, you know, you don't necessarily want to be out there, but you know, it's that initial, like, just get it done. And then, you know, once I'm on the bike, I'm like, all right, this is great. I'm happy. I'm out here. Yeah. I can do this.
Yeah.
So I agree. Yeah.
And along with that, like, here you are over 100 days riding 10 miles a day. I mean, that in itself is just, that's such a huge commitment. But do you have any advice or encouragement you could give to other cyclists who maybe they don't want to do 10 miles a day, but maybe they are having trouble making that step to get the bike outside to ride?
Yeah, I think, and we just said this, right? The hardest part is just getting on the bike, right? So, you know, it may be like it's summer now, right? So lay out everything you need for your bike, right? You know, if you know that you want to try riding the next day, lay out, you know, your cycling shorts, your water bottle, get everything ready to go. And, you know, put it on your calendar, you know, that way, like, don't make excuses. Or, you know, if you have cycling friends, like, set up a time that the two of you are going to go cycling. The biggest thing is just get on your bike. And even if that means a mile, that's a mile that, you know, you've done. So just really working on just getting yourself on the bike, however that happens. I always find once I'm on the bike, I'm usually like happier about it. And then I remember, right? Oh, this is why I love it. This is why I want to be on my bike.
Oh yeah. And then you get done. You're like, why did I not want to go?
I agree. Yeah.
Yeah. I do that too. So what's next for you? I mean, we already know you're going to do 2025 Mid-South because, you know, that's going to be your last day of 10 miles a day. Maybe.
We'll see.
But,
Yeah, so I actually have a bunch of things, probably too many things. But some of these events, right, I look at it just being like able to be with my friends. In 2 weeks, I'm doing an event called the Bear 100, which is in central Wisconsin. I'm doing the 77 mile, it's gravel in the North Woods. And then I'm doing 100 miles at Unbound in June. Grounded Nebraska at the end of June. SBT in August, Gravel Worlds in August, some other little events in there too. So,
and you have obviously upgraded from that road bike that you just put bigger tires on, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, I ended up buying a Salsa Cutthroat.
Oh yeah,
I mean, that's more of a like endurance bike packing type. You know, I have 2.2 tires on it, but it fits me so well, right? And that's a big thing, right? You want to find a bike that fits and feels comfortable,
right?
So that definitely helped too at Mid-South, right? I never had aches or pains or you know anything like that because the bike, it fits me. So
well, if anybody would like to, you know, even I guess they could go to Mid-South Facebook and Instagram to see all kinds of photos of you, especially of that big skull thing. But do you have any socials that you would be interested in sharing with people?
Sure. Instagram is probably the best place to find me. And don't laugh at my Instagram handle, but it's T-Rex, T-R-E-X loves cake. T-Rex loves cake.
Awesome.
So I'll tell you the story because everybody's like, what is that? Back when I was a power lifter, my upper body strength does not even match my lower body strength. And they used to call me T-Rex because I could barely bench anything. So I became T-Rex.
And it stuck. Awesome. Well, Beth, I appreciate you coming on the podcast and telling your story, and proud to have met you, even if it's just over the phone. But I got to see you in action at Mid-South, and I thought it was pretty darn cool.
Yeah, thank you so much for letting me share my story. I appreciate it.
You bet. And I will, actually, we didn't even mention it, but we will be at a gravel camp in a couple weeks. So we'll get to meet each other in real life.
Yeah, that'll be exciting. Let's hope we can tackle those hills,
That's
too.
That's right. That's right. All right. Thanks, Beth.
Thank you so much.
Well, listeners, that's it for this week. Email me at morphologypodcast@gmail.com if you have a topic or the name of a cyclist you find interesting. Support my podcast at patreon.com/morphology and visit both my Facebook and Instagram pages for daily entertainment. I have more great episodes in the pipeline, so I hope you continue to be a Morphology Podcast listener.